everybody. I'm Amanda Steele, a former teacher, a board-certified behavior analyst, and a perpetually human being who believes that we can all make the world a healthier place to be through increased self-compassion. Join me in the self-compassion study as I share my own challenges, tips and tricks founded in behavioral science, and successes I observe both within and around me. Enjoy a gentler, more fulfilling life as together we understand what loving and being kind to ourselves both means and looks like. Using ourselves as the subjects of our study, may we grow in self-compassion together. Hello and welcome to the Self-Compassion Study, episode number one. What is self-compassion and how can we practice it? For context, I'm just going to start this show by giving you some background on self-compassion. Then I have some cool research to share with you, some information that you can apply to your own life, and I'll also just be sharing some of my own musings as we go as well. I'm super excited that you're here, and honestly, I am super excited to be here as well. For starters, this is called the Self-Compassion Study because I'm always experimenting on myself to find out how I can improve my quality of life. Specifically, right now in my life, I'm diving into a lot of creative endeavors, and I don't know if it's being in my 40s or having finally done enough research to realize this, but honestly, the most self-compassionate thing I can do for me on this podcasting journey is just not to overthink it. Whatever sharing this means for you, I hope you'll explore it. If it means there is a project you've been hesitant to dive into, I hope you do it. If it means this podcast turns out not to be your jam, I'm okay with that too. For me, this just feels like a very self-compassionate place to be. Just remember, please, as I remind myself as well, you can dive into creative pursuits just because they matter to you and you don't have to know where they'll land. That is not just for other people, it is literally for you too. Okay, let's do this. So the Dalai Lama defines compassion as cultivating a close, warm-hearted feeling for others that automatically puts the mind at ease. This definition is important not for those seeking to be more compassionate. I think it's actually especially important in the context of this study for those who have an overabundance of compassion. Who am I talking about? Specifically, individuals in helping professions. Teachers, nurses, police officers, and those who give so much of themselves every day already know what compassion is. And I think that if other people didn't realize this before, the COVID-19 pandemic especially shed light on this, as we all witnessed individuals in helping professions prioritize compassion above all else day after day. Raise your hand if you're not okay with that. Nod your head if the following resonates with you. An individual can engage in compassionate care for only so long before they burn out and their talents are no longer available to serve the greater good. Now let's take the Dalai Lama's definition of compassion and insert a focus on oneself. Self-compassion is cultivating a close, warm-hearted feeling for oneself that automatically puts the mind at ease. Put your hand on your heart if this automatically provides you with space and room to breathe. And then consider this. When we focus on self-compassion first, how much more room does this make for compassion for others? I believe it's actually quite a bit. In fact, I believe it's the difference between being able to stay in a helping profession and being burnt out and having to leave it. Whether or not our education or medical systems are what people would call broken, there will always be children who need to be taught, and there will always be sick people who need to be cared for. So yes, I feel passionate that we might identify ways to prioritize self-compassion first. The first resource I'm going to share with you today comes from Harvard University, and it is an article entitled, How Do We Boost Our Self-Compassion? As you listen, I'd love to encourage you to pick one thing that you will focus on trying today. Here we go. The first tip is to comfort your body. Go for a walk, rest, gently massage the tension out of your own neck, eat something healthy. Maybe you'd enjoy a hot cup of tea, or maybe you have stiffness in your hips or low back, so you make time for some mobility exercises. Maybe you need a hug, and you just need to let someone who cares about you know this. Number two tip involves writing yourself a letter. The folks at Harvard recommend that if something has caused you pain, write about it, but without blaming others or yourself. In meditation, we talk about this as being a witness to your experiences rather than owning the emotions that you may feel as a result of your experiences. Okay, so maybe writing a letter to yourself is too much. Totally okay. Tip number three is simple. Give yourself encouragement. In the article, they talk about thinking of what you would say to a friend if they were in a stressful situation and then directing that inner energy at yourself. I love this. I'll add that you could even say a quiet, loving kindness meditation, wishing a dear friend safety, happiness, health, and a life of ease. Then repeating the same wishes for yourself. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. You could even be your own cheerleader. I mutter things like, you've got this, and keep going, literally all day long. The challenges of life are just so much easier when I believe in me too. And the fourth and final tip offered by Harvard is to practice mindfulness. In the article, they say to spend just a few quiet minutes practicing, but honestly, until I really started listening to guided meditations, I did not know what that meant. So I'm going to share some ideas for you to try based on my own experience. Basically, I sit quietly in a comfortable seated position and begin by taking a few deep breaths. I let my thoughts naturally move about, and then I either focus on sensations throughout my body, or I use my mind's eye to follow my breath as it enters my nose, fills up my lungs and diaphragm, and then as it releases back out. There are many ways to practice mindfulness though, so please do what works for you. Okay, I hope these tips from Harvard have helped you. And now I'm going to sidestep back to my own musings and ask a question. How old are you? Just kidding. You don't have to tell me. The real question I should probably be asking is, what stage are you at in your life? Reflect on whatever that is, whether you're finishing school and stepping out into the world. Maybe you're navigating a first job, starting a family, or maybe you're like me and you're finding your groove, but you also have teenage children who love to ask you what it was like to live in the Stone Age. I have some good news for you, whatever your answer is. You are exactly where you're supposed to be. Everything you did before this stage right now prepared you for exactly where you are now. And the only person who can truly enjoy that is you. Just another great reason to be compassionate with yourself, right? The next article I'm going to share does remind us that regardless of wherever we are now, we all are getting older. And there are self-compassionate ways to improve that experience. This article comes from Berkeley University, and it is entitled, Five Ways That Mindfulness Helps You Age Better. Okay, number one, mindfulness helps prevent depression and anxiety. I would absolutely agree. Many of the ways that I have suffered in the past involved focusing on challenges in ways that were not very self-compassionate. And the more I practice mindfulness, the more bearable challenges tend to be. Number two, mindfulness can improve cognition. researchers conducted a neuroscience study on adults ages 65 to 80. There were two groups, one who went through mindfulness training and another who did things like Sudoku puzzles and crossword puzzles to keep themselves sharp. And they found that the people in the mindfulness group scored better on many areas, including pre-Alzheimer's tests. Number four, mindfulness might help fight disease. Absolutely. Number five, mindfulness can help us manage pain. Ooh, there are a lot of cool examples of this that I'm not going to dive into right now, but I will circle back to this in future podcast episodes. Number six, mindfulness leads to better overall quality of life. One example is that studies have found that practicing mindfulness improves sleep. And I don't know about you, but I have never been able to muscle my way through a lack of sleep. Okay, that's it. I hope you've enjoyed this episode and are starting to think about ways you can be more compassionate with yourself. If you try something and it works for you, or if anything resonated with you today, please do reach out and let me know. I'm sharing this podcast because of the success I've had in my own life and the conversations I've had with so many people who are growing in this way right now. And I would love for you to be a part of this conversation. Thank you so much for listening and have a wonderful couple of weeks. I will be back in 2 weeks from now with a brand new episode, and I hope to see you there. Thank you so much for joining me for today's episode of the Self-Compassion Study. I hope you leave feeling a little more peaceful, hopeful, and willing to put your hand on your heart and appreciate all that you have to offer. As a reminder, don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Amanda Steely for more tips and tricks, and subscribe to the show so you never miss a podcast.